So we've been looking at some Psalms for the past few weeks and examining how they map to our human emotions. Our lives are made up of emotions in various circumstances, and the Psalms speak to those emotions no matter what we're facing in life. When Pastor Jonathan was planning out this sermon series, he and I were talking and praying about which passages we would want to speak on, which passages we were being led to speak on. And some of it had to do with my travel schedule. There was a period of time that I wouldn't be able to speak. But one of the sermons that was available for me to speak on was talking to God when I want revenge. And I thought that's so interesting. I think revenge is such a common human emotion. I think we all feel it at some point to some degree. Maybe it's something small, like when someone cuts us off while we're driving. But sometimes we read in the news about people who take revenge to an extreme end. And so I thought, well, I've never studied what the Bible has to say about revenge, so I'd like to see. So I took on this sermon, and I've been studying this psalm for a while, and I'm excited to share what some of the discoveries that I've made as I've dug into God's Word. Here's how the sermon is going to work. We've got part one of the sermon. We're going to analyze the psalm, sort of an abbreviated version of the same process that I went through when I was studying the psalm. We're going to analyze it with some poetic analysis, which I know you all got out of bed on a Sunday morning, on a summer Sunday morning to do some poetic analysis. But we'll keep it light, we'll keep it fun, and I think you might go away with some tools and ideas and strategies that you might be able to use in your own Bible study. Then part two of the sermon, a little bit shorter, is going to be the application, and we're going to apply some of the lessons that we learned in part one. And in between part one and part two, I'm going to take a little break. We're not going to go for coffee, not that kind of break. We're not all going to run to Tim Hortons. Just a short break between part one and part two of my sermon, in which I'm going to make a shocking discovery, a shocking confession about a discovery I made while I was studying this passage. And I think you might be surprised, as I was. And in fact, the discovery that I'll be sharing with you completely changed the direction of the sermon for me as I was preparing it. If you have a bulletin and you're a note taker, the back has a little chart. I've preached here enough that I think you know, or I've taught here enough too, that I think you know I'm a chart guy. I need a chart. I'm a visual learner. I'm a visual thinker. So I need to chart things out. It helps me see the patterns and how pieces fit together. So if you're a note taker, you've got the chart in the back, you can follow along. You'll see that the psalm is divided up into six sections. And most of your Bibles will probably have a little space between each section in the psalm. The editors put that in so that we can sort of quickly see that, yes, the psalm is divided up into these specific sections. So there's six sections. We're going to go through section by section. There's also three columns to the right where you can take notes. In part one of my sermon, I'm going to deal with the two middle columns, observations and summary. We're going to fill out those two columns as we analyze the psalm. Leave the last column blank for now. We're going to handle that in the last part of the sermon. The application part of the sermon, we're going to handle that then. So we can leave that blank and we'll get to it. So let's roll up our sleeves and dig into Psalm 94. So we're looking at section 1, which is verse 1 to 3. O Lord, the God who avenges, O God who avenges, shine forth. Rise up, O judge of the earth. Pay back to the proud what they deserve. How long will the wicked, O Lord, how long will the wicked be jubilant? We can make some observations, filling out on the back if you're a note taker. We can make some observations about this section of the psalm. We see an invocation there in which the psalmist says, O Lord, the God who avenges, O God who avenges, shine forth. The psalmist is calling on God, and as we've seen in previous psalms that we've studied in this series, that the psalmist uses the all caps version of the word Lord, the word Yahweh, that holy and sacred name, Yahweh. Yahweh, the God who avenges. O God who avenges, shine forth. In fact, the word God, or Yahweh, or a title of God, is used 5 times in this short section. We have Yahweh, we have the God who avenges, that's in verse 1. Judge of the earth in verse 2. And Yahweh is repeated again in verse 3. In just 3 short verses, the psalmist is crying out using a name or a title of God 5 times. Things must be pretty serious. We have the plea in verse 2, O judge of the earth, pay back to the proud what they deserve. So we're starting to get an idea of what this psalm is about. And then the question, how long will the wicked be jubilant? How long? And when you're studying the Psalms, if you notice a plea and you notice the words how long, that is a clue to you that you're reading a lament. In very general terms, there are praise psalms for when things are going great, and there are lament psalms when things are going bad. It's a pretty broad generalization, but in general it works. If you see a plea and you see the words how long, that's a lament psalm. That's a clue to us that things are going poorly right now for the psalmist. So we're going to examine the psalm to see what exactly is going wrong. And we can summarize this passage just as an introductory portion of the psalm. It's just an introduction that sets the tone, establishes who the psalm is to and what it's about. All right, moving on to the next section, the second section of the psalm, verse 4 to 7. Now the psalmist, still talking to God, is talking about the problem. They pour out arrogant words. All the evildoers are full of boasting. They crush your people, O Lord. They oppress your inheritance. They slay the wicked and the alien. They murder the fatherless. They say, the Lord does not see. The God of Jacob pays no heed. And here we see, well, actually, before I advance the slide, notice what's going on here in this passage. They're pouring out arrogant words and they're boasting. That's sort of the first description of what they're doing. They're crushing people and oppressing them. Then they're slaying the widow, the alien, and the fatherless. And then they're saying, the Lord doesn't see, the God of Jacob pays no heed. What we're seeing here is a poetic description, a poetic progression of how bad things are getting. It starts out with words, then oppression, then murder, then the denial of the power of God. Things are getting worse and worse, according to the psalmist. So we can jot that down as our observation. Things are getting worse. And I would summarize this section of the psalm as it's about the wicked, and things are bad right now. Things are bad. Now let's move on to the next section, 94, verse 8 to 11. Take heed, you senseless ones among the people, you fools. When will you become wise? Does he who implanted the ear not hear? Does he who formed the eye not see? Does he who disciplines nations not punish? Does he who teaches man lack knowledge? The Lord knows the thoughts of man. He knows that they are futile. Now the psalmist is still talking to God, but seems to be pointing an accusatory finger at the evildoers and speaking to the evildoers in a way while still speaking to God, and urges them to take heed. And we see a series of questions. Oh, I should have made that plural, sorry. Questions and an answer. Questions and an answer. And I'm just going to back up the slide here so that you can see them. There we go. We have, when will you become wise? These are the questions. When will you become wise? And then some questions about the character of God. Does he who implanted the ear not hear? Does he who formed the eye not see? So the psalmist is asking, you say that God doesn't see, but the God who invented hearing can hear, and the God who invented seeing can see, and the God who invented knowledge knows. And then he summarizes an answer by saying, the Lord knows the thoughts of man. He knows that they are futile. So we get the series of questions and an answer, and then we can summarize this section. It's still about the wicked, but this time there's a proclamation that God knows what's going on. You can sense a bit of confidence, even though he's facing some hard times. There's a little bit of confidence in there in the very end of that section. I'll let the note takers catch up while I quickly grab a drink. Now we move on to the next section, Psalm 94, verse 12 to 15. Blessed is the man you discipline, O Lord, the man you teach from your law. You grant him relief from days of trouble till a pit is dug for the wicked. For the Lord will not reject his people. He will never forsake his inheritance. Judgment will again be founded on righteousness, and all the upright in heart will follow it. And just before I advance the slide, we notice a couple things here. We notice the sense of discipline, which is kind of an interesting thing that we don't always like to think about, but the hardship that the psalmist is facing is being viewed here as discipline, even though it's coming from an evildoer. We also notice down at verse 15 that the psalmist is talking about righteousness and the upright in heart. And he's sort of aligning himself with that. The psalmist is seeing himself as a righteous person, as someone who is upright in heart. And although it's hard for us in this situation to notice it, because we don't have the whole psalm in front of us, you'll notice that the words, the Lord will not reject his people, he will never forsake his inheritance. Those words are echoed from an earlier portion of the passage. Back in verse 5, we read, they crush your people, O Lord. They oppress your inheritance. We're seeing the same words picked up again here, but this time talking to God about how he will never do those things to his people and his inheritance. So a couple of observations we can make. There's the sense of discipline, which might surprise us when we talk about wrongdoing happening to us. It's still a form of discipline. To build character, and righteousness. And then we can summarize this portion of the passage that it's now talking about the righteous, no longer about the wicked, as it was in the second section of the psalm, but it's now talking about the righteous, but it's still talking about it's bad. Okay, moving on to the next section. So begin 16 to 19. Who will rise up for me against the wicked? Who will take a stand for me against evildoers? Unless the Lord had given me help, I would soon have dwelt in the silence of death. When I said, my foot is slipping, your love, O Lord, supported me. When anxiety was great within me, your consolation brought joy to my soul. We see here that God answers prayer. Very often in lament psalms, you will see this kind of motif where the psalmist is facing a difficult situation and he says to God, you've helped me in the past when things were difficult. Now be faithful and help me again. Stay true to your character and help me again. That's a very common motif that you see in lament psalms, and we see it here. The psalmist says, who will rise up for me? And then the psalmist says, the Lord has given me help in the past. He supported me and consoled me when I was anxious. So we get a sense that God does indeed answer prayer. And I would summarize this section as, it's again about the righteous, and this time, God helps. And so if you're taking notes, you might notice that there's a pattern. I know this is super hard to see. I should have made it in the slides, but I didn't, so just squint a little bit while I'm pointing at this. But we have the section one of the psalm, that's the introduction. Then sections 2, 3, 4, and 5, that's the main portion of the psalm, and we notice a pattern there. Sections 2 and 3, they're about the wicked. Sections 4 and 5, they're about the righteous. But there's a mirroring effect going on here, that section two about the wicked, it describes how bad things are. And section 4 about the righteous describes how bad things are. Then section 3 about the wicked says God knows what's going on. And section 5 about the righteous assures God helps when things are bad. So we see an interesting pattern here, a poetic pattern that the psalmist is using as he cries out his lament to God. Now we get to the last section of the psalm, verse 20-23. Can a corrupt throne be allied with you? One that brings on misery by its decrees? They band together against the righteous and condemn the innocent to death. But the Lord has become my fortress and my God, the rock in whom I take refuge. He will repay them for their sins and destroy them for their wickedness. The Lord, our God, will destroy them. These are strong words. And we can make some observations about this section. We see a contrast between, and I'm just going to back up here so that you can see it again. Notice verse 20 and 21, we see a discussion of the corrupt throne, the evildoers. And then that's contrasted against 22 and 23, where the psalmist is talking about himself and the community that's being oppressed. The Lord has become my fortress, and the Lord our God will destroy the evildoers. So we get this, going back to the observations here, I know I'm going back and forth, we get this contrast between the two. And the last two verses express the confidence that the psalmist has that God will have the final word. In a way, this last section of the psalm, these four verses, are sort of a picture of the entire psalm itself. I'm going to back up again here for a second. Notice that the first two verses of this section talk about the wicked, just as sections 2 and 3 talked about the wicked. Then the second two verses, verse 22 and 23, talk about the righteous, just as sections 4 and 5 talked about the righteous. In a way, this passage is a summary, it's a restatement, and it expands on the thinking that was explored earlier in the psalm. So, our observations are, it was a contrast and confidence, and we can summarize this as a restatement of the psalm in its entirety. So, we've done some analysis. Sorry, that's me, it's clicking around, isn't it? My phone is off, is it something else? Okay. All right. We've done some analysis. And as we've been looking at this, we've also been thinking about what's going on, looking for details and clues about what, when, where, who, why, and how. This is what you do when you're studying the Bible. You do some analysis on the passage itself, and you try to fill out those simple questions: what, where, when, who, why, and how. And it's when we get to the question about who is this psalm talking about, that we really unlock the meaning of this psalm. The psalmists themselves, they're saying that they are righteous, that they are upright, and they're associating themselves with the community of God. You may recall the psalmist talks about your people, your inheritance, and the Lord our God will destroy them. So the psalmist is associating himself with this righteous and upright community of God. And now we look at who the evildoers are. And this is a little bit trickier to spot at first, but as soon as we start looking at the clues, it will change what we think this psalm is about. Let me tell you what the clues are. And I don't want to keep going back and forth there. I think that's going to give us all seasickness. So I'm just going to read a couple of the clues for you. So in verse 2, we read when the psalmist says, "Rise up, O judge of the earth." Well, when the psalmist is calling on the judge of the earth, that's a big title for some kind of wrongdoing that's going on. So the wrongdoing must be something pretty significant. Then we read in verse 5, "They crush your people, O Lord, and they oppress your inheritance." Your people, your inheritance. These are words that we use when we're talking about kings. The king's citizens are his people and his inheritance. Your people, your inheritance. So the psalmist seems to be talking about a king, maybe. Then we get down to verse 15, where it says, "Judgment will again be founded on righteousness." Judgment will again be founded on righteousness. Now, judgment was the job of the ruler or the king of the area. You may remember when Moses was leading the Israelites out of Egypt, he was doing a lot of the judging, a lot of the dispute handling. When someone had a problem, they would come to him, he would make a judgment. And you may remember that his father-in-law said, "You're so busy, you need to appoint these sub-judges under you to help you." And you might remember the story of Solomon, who was also conducting judgments on his people, the two women who couldn't agree on whose son that was between them. They came to him, and he made a judgment. It's the job of the ruler or the king of the land to make judgments. And verse 15 says, "Judgment will again be founded on righteousness," which seems to suggest that the psalmist believes that judgment isn't currently founded on righteousness. Then we get to verse 20, which is perhaps the clearest expression of who the evildoer is in this psalm. Verse 20, "Can a corrupt throne be allied with you, one that brings on misery by its decrees?" Well, now that's pretty clear. The psalmist seems to be talking about a corrupt throne. He says, how can a ruler who is corrupt be aligned with you, God, who is holy? And this ruler seems to be making decrees that bring misery, that bring oppression. When I first chose this psalm to preach, I was expecting to preach a psalm about, preach a sermon about individual vengeance. If someone cuts me off, how am I to react? If there's a bully at school, how might a student react to that? If you face a coworker who slanders you at work, you might want to take vengeance, but how do you react to that? That's sort of situational, one-on-one vengeance that we encounter day to day. And I was expecting to study that when I first thought about this, preaching this psalm. I was thinking that that's what this psalm was about, because the whole theme was talking to God when I want vengeance. But the evidence in the psalm suggests this is another kind of vengeance altogether. So let's put the pieces together that we've talked about. In very broad strokes, this psalm is about an upright people of God who are being oppressed by a ruler. And this upright community of God is calling out to God to save them, to avenge them, to take vengeance because they are helpless, even to the point of death. I realized that this psalm is not about what happens, what your response should be when someone cuts you off. That this psalm is about what happens when rulers and authorities start to oppress the people of God. There's still vengeance involved. I didn't go back to Pastor Jonathan to say, there's no vengeance here, let's find a new psalm. I felt that we should still preach this psalm, but be true to what the text said. And the text is telling us that this isn't about individual vengeance. This is about a community that's feeling oppression and needs to be saved. If you were hoping to learn about individual vengeance, there are great passages in the Bible about that. You can go to Romans 12, 19 to 21. There's excellent material there about that. There are other sermons to be preached on that. But this sermon is taking a different direction than I was first expecting when I signed up to preach it. But we have to stay true to what the text says. And the text is telling us that that the people of God in this psalm are being oppressed by rulers and authorities who are not aligned with God. Fortunately, when we're answering who is involved in this psalm, we've talked about the upright, the people of God. We've talked about the evildoers. We haven't yet talked about the main character of the Bible, and that is God. Embedded throughout this psalm are characteristics of God that give hope to those reading this psalm. So we get to the third, or the final column now, the third blank column, God's characteristics. We're going to see that God's characteristics are embedded throughout the psalm and bring hope to those who are facing this situation. And before I get to that, I want to say here's why it's relevant to us. We might have come hoping to learn about revenge on an individual basis because we don't think that we're oppressed as a community of God. But it will happen. Not that long from now, we will find ourselves oppressed. The social and legal and political tides will turn against believers. It's already happening a little bit. There was a time when it was perfectly acceptable and encouraged to be a Christian, or at least to say you're a Christian, even if you didn't believe it. And now, that's certainly not the case. And in the not-too-distant future, it will get more difficult for believers to say that they're a Christian, to attend church, to read their Bible or pray, to share their faith. Things will become difficult. And Psalm 94 speaks to that. Fortunately, embedded throughout the psalm are characteristics of God that we can hold on to and hope for when things become difficult for us. In the interest of time, I'm not going to read through the whole psalm again, but I'm just going to hit on a couple points here. So we have in the first section, verse 1 to 3, we have God as an avenging judge. The psalmist calls out to God, the God who avenges and the judge of the earth. This first section, verse 1 to 3, God is an avenging judge. Moving on to the second section of the psalm, verse 4 to 7, and if I'm going too fast, I can just give you the answers later. The next characteristic, we see God as king. Again, just as a reminder, this is where we hear about your people, O Lord, and your inheritance. These words about the citizens who belong to the king, God is being positioned as king here in this section. Verse 8 to 11, this is the section that talks about he who implanted the ear does not hear, and does he who formed the eye not see? God is an all-knowing creator. He knows what's going on with his creation. Then this next section, verse 12 to 15, talking about discipline and righteousness. We read that God is faithful. It says he will never forsake his inheritance. Then the next section, verse 16 to 19, we read right down there in verse 18, when I said, my foot is slipping, your love, O Lord, supported me. God is loving. Then the last section, verse 20 to 23, we read right in verse 22, that God is the rock in whom I take refuge. A characteristic here of God, God is the rock of refuge that we can cling to. I came into this sermon, or not today, but I committed to preaching this sermon, expecting to preach a sermon about individual vengeance. And I was surprised to discover that that's not the case in this particular passage. You can go to other passages to learn about that. This passage is a psalm about what happens when the people of God find themselves in hardship and oppression because of rulers. And it speaks to us today. It is so timely because things are starting to turn against believers, and there will come a time when things get harder. It didn't change from the psalmist's time. Jesus himself found the same circumstances when he willingly went to the cross and laid down his life for our sins. And then we read even further into the New Testament. The book of Hebrews, my favorite New Testament book, we read about it's a letter to community of God being oppressed by rulers for what they believe. It's sort of a New Testament version of Psalm 94. And we read in Hebrews this call to persevere. And I'm going to read just a couple of verses from Hebrews. I don't have it on the screen. And I want us to think about how it impacts us, maybe not immediately today, but how it encourages us and impacts us, because in the very near future, these words will become our life. So reading from Hebrews 10, remember those earlier days after you had received the light, when you stood your ground in great contest in the face of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You sympathized with those in prison. You joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you'll receive what he has promised. And what he has promised for the faithful is an eternity in heaven with him for those who have accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior. And we read in Hebrews 12, make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. You have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the living God. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all men, to the spirits of righteous men who made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. Therefore, since you are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, in spite of what the rulers are doing, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. These words in Hebrews and in Psalm 94 mean a lot to us today, but as things get harder, they will become even more meaningful. Friends, I urge you to imprint Psalm 94 on your heart for a time when we may not even have a Bible to read from. And when that happens, we'll have Psalm 94 on our hearts, our minds, our lips to pray for the judge of the earth, because we worship an avenging God. I'm going to ask the music team to come forward. And as the music team's coming forward, we're going to be singing a song, and we'll have some, if you're thinking about what this might mean for you, maybe you're hoping for strength today, maybe you're wondering what it means to live an eternity with Jesus, then we'll have people up here who would be happy to pray with you. You can come forward during the song or during the prayer after. They'll be happy to pray with you and talk to you. Go ahead, Nick.